This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, Episode 89, was recorded on January 20th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. GavCal co-founder Louis Vincent Gav is back with us once again. Louis, it's great to have you on the program. I want to talk about this stock market because, frankly, some of the smartest minds in finance have articulated incredibly good reasons to think that, hey, this has got to be the top because these valuations seem kind of crazy. But frankly, if I just look at the tape, it seems like what's been driving this has been central bank liquidity. We got more central bank liquidity on tap, not less. Maybe it just keeps going. So when does this melt up end and what should we be looking for? Is it time to be cautious or is it time to just keep on riding the wave?
Well, first of all, very happy new year to you, Eric. Very happy new year to all your listeners. To answer your question, maybe with a bit of luck, we'll have another year where every single asset class goes up. It's, history would seem to suggest that this is unlikely, but one can live in hope. Look, to your point on great minds and some of the biggest names in the business being somewhat stumped by what happened last year, I think there's obviously no greater investment mind and investment track record than Warren Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway. And, last year was interesting because this was a year where, Warren Buffett underperformed the S&P 500 by roughly 20%. Now, you've seldom seen, and he's had a long and very distinguished career, you've seldom seen this kind of underperformance by Warren Buffett. In fact, you've only seen it twice. You've seen it in 1999, and you've seen it in 2009. And so, aside from concluding that we shouldn't invest with Warren Buffett in years that end with 9, which is not very useful because we won't have a year that ends with 9 for another 10 years, aside from concluding that, my takeaway from this is that, Warren Buffett underperformed in years that were, frankly, highly unusual for the markets. If you look at 1999, of course, it was the massive TMT bubble. If you look at 2009, it was a very sharp rally following the 2008 meltdown. And so, this year you could say, we've had no major event last year. But to your point, we've had no major event, but we had a number of very odd developments. We, of course, had the world moving from $7 trillion in negative yielding debt to $17 trillion in negative yielding debt over the course of the summer. And, you and I discussed it at the time, and I made the point that this was the greatest bubble the world had ever seen. But, if you'd gone off to sea for 6 months and come back and had been shown a chart of the world moving from $7 trillion in negative yielding debt to $17 trillion, you would have asked, did World War III start, or did a major bank go bust, or what justifies these kinds of? Are we in a massive depression like the 1930s? And you would have been told, no, it's U.S. growth came in broadly as expected, and Chinese growth came in broadly as expected, and European growth was a little bit disappointing. And then you would have been left scratching your head. Why such a move in negative interest rates everywhere? And here, I think the answer is pretty simple. It all comes down to the investment zeitgeist that we live in today. And in the investment zeitgeist that we live in today, I think you start off with the premise that large parts of the world will really have no choice but to keep interest rates in negative territory. And so with Europe, Switzerland, Japan all keeping negative interest rates, it makes sense for investors to just pile on more risk. The second pillar of the current investment zeitgeist is that with every major currency keeping interest rates in negative territory, the U.S. dollar is the least ugly currency and the U.S. dollar will stay strong. But then the problem with the strong U.S. dollar is that it basically caps growth in emerging markets, which brings you to pillar number 3. With limited growth in emerging markets, global growth is almost certain to remain mediocre. Pillar number 4, with no acceleration in growth, inflation is not a risk. And then pillar number five, in this environment, the only place you can invest is therefore technology, because you have to go where the growth is. And that's the only part of the world that has growth. And so you find a year like you had last year where, you know, Apple's up 85%, Microsoft is up 58%, Facebook's up 50%, TSMC's up 65%, so on and so forth. This is the current investment zeitgeist. It's obviously an investment zeitgeist that's very challenging for active managers, because you're now in a world where the top five stocks in the U.S., which are, you know, all mega cap tech stocks, account for 18% of the S&P 500. It's a new record high. And so if you're not overweight these guys, you're almost guaranteed to underperform. To your point, will this continue? You know, I listed five pillars. I think there's actually reasons to believe that all five pillars will come under pressure in 2020, and therefore that the investment zeitgeist will change. That the kind of underperformance that you saw from active managers like Warren Buffett will not last into the coming year.
Okay, Louis, so let's translate that to actionable trading strategy. It seems like maybe what you're saying is that this isn't going to last, but at the same time, we know that the people who bailed out last year and said these valuations are crazy, they were right that the valuations were crazy, but they also ended up leaving money on the table by bailing out early. Is it still early to be bailing out? Is it time to scale back? What do we do here?
I do believe it is time to scale back. You know, I've been scaling back myself, which has been, like you point out, very painful for the past year. But look, you know, I listed five pillars. The first, and I think there's reasons to believe that all five of these pillars will be coming under attack in the coming weeks and months. You know, the first pillar was the idea that interest rates will stay negative through large parts of the world. I think one of the big surprises of 2019 was how the Swedish Riksbank out of nowhere decided, hey, look, negative interest rates are a big drag on growth. I got to stop doing that, and brought interest rates back to zero. Now, you know, that now that Sweden has done this, this is going to trigger a very different set of discussions at the ECB, at the Swiss National Bank, perhaps even at the BOJ. But for me, actually, out of the five pillars, the more interesting one is probably the second one, the idea that the US dollar is the least ugly currency in the world, and that in a strong dollar world, emerging market growth will always disappoint. I think this is the one that will really come under pressure in 2020, and could come under pressure as soon as March. Indeed, you know, I think one of the odd things of recent months is that the Fed has obviously returned to some kind of quantitative easing, and or at least balance sheet expansion. You know, they're adding $60 to $80 billion a month every month into the system since October 5th. The markets have obviously loved it. The S&P 500 hasn't gone down a single week since the Fed started doing this. But the U.S. dollar really hasn't responded very much. It's gone down marginally against most currencies, but very, very marginally. This may be because the Fed has been telling us, look, come March, I'm going back to balance sheet normalization. So the $60 billion a month that you're getting, don't get used to it, because come March, it's over. Which brings you, I think, to a very important crossroad in March. One of two things can happen. The first thing is that the Fed really does start to normalize its balance sheet. And then the question will be, who funds the runaway U.S. budget deficits? Will the money that the U.S. federal government needs come out of the equity market, come out of the corporate bond markets? Wherever it comes out of, one thing seems pretty clear to me, is that if the Fed goes back to balance sheet normalization, the equity market is unlikely to cheer that as much as it cheered the balance sheet expansion. So that's option one. Option two, the Fed doesn't actually go back to normalizing its balance sheet. Instead, the Fed continues to print, if only because it's worried about creating a financial market accident 6 months before the presidential election. And in that case, I think the U.S. dollar really, really starts to take a hit. And that second scenario seems to me more likely. And, you know, as the U.S. dollar starts to take a hit, you should start to see a significant rotation in the markets away from the overvalued, overowned, overhyped U.S. large cap tech stocks towards pretty much everything else. So I would say, look, come March, I think we're in an important crossroad. Either you probably get a bit of an equity market sell-off, or you get a U.S. dollar sell-off. Either way, I think you want to come into to the month of March with some protection in your portfolios.
And if you're taking chips off the table from the equity market, what are you replacing them with?
That's a great question. Well, look, I think for me today, one of the more interesting development of 2019 that nobody talked about was the important change of tone from the Chinese central bank. You know, the Chinese central banker, Yigong, rarely makes public declarations. And in June 2019, he made a, you know, he spoke at a Bloomberg conference where he basically highlighted that, look, if the U.S. keeps bashing on us, we can always devalue the currency and let the currency take the brunt of the adjustment and keep our growth steady thanks to currency devaluation. Needless to say, at the time, the renminbi didn't like it. The renminbi fell. They didn't appreciate the dovish tone of the PBOC. Fast forward to December, and Yigong gave another speech, this time much more hawkish. In this speech, Yigong stressed that China would never follow the Fed and ECB and BOJ down the path of QE, that maintaining the value of the currency was very important, and that maintaining positive interest rates was not only part of Chinese culture, but it was also, and he used those words, but it was also beneficial to the economy long term. And so you've had really in the past 6 months, while every major central bank out there has started to sound, you know, even more and more dovish and basically falling over each other to try and debase their currency, you've had one major central bank in the world that says, well, I'm not going to join that game. I'm actually, you know, I want to maintain the value of my currency, on my currency to be a strong currency. And, you know, with that in mind, I think I really believe that, you know, one of the better hedges as we move forward to a period of uncertainty, if the Fed, depending on what the Fed says and does, might very well be RMB bonds. You know, I think Chinese bonds today offer genuine diversification for portfolios. They're a completely under-owned asset class. They offer much, much higher yield than anywhere in the Western world. And it's basically the only currency in the world where you now have the central bank fighting in your corner. So I don't think we need to overthink this. For me, RMB bonds today are the diversification of choice.
Louis, I'm surprised you didn't mention gold yet. Where does that fit into the story?
Oh, hey, well, you know my long-term view that gold is really another way to play emerging markets. When emerging market growth is strong, you usually find gold prices moving up, if only because most of the physical demand for gold comes out of China, India, and the Middle East. And so, you know, in a world in which the RMB moves higher, in a world in which the US dollar moves lower, you know, I think it's hard to be bearish gold. So gold is undeniably another way, I think, to hedge portfolios coming into this March uncertainty, no doubt about it.
Well, Louis, I can't thank you enough for another terrific interview. We look forward to getting you back next month for another update. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend-following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.